Welcome to The Evolution of Parenting. I'm Yorona, an advanced certified life coach, certified speaker coach, international speaker, and more. But most importantly for me, I'm a mother. With 17 years in the fields and studies of early childhood development, psychology, and coaching, I've come to the realization that the role of parenting never stops, but it does change. In fact, it has to change. In season one, we explored some foundational themes of parenting, and for season two, we'll be exploring various topics with special guests who can delve into these subjects from an expert perspective. What I'd really like to do after that is dive into understanding the impact around the choices we make as parents regarding these particular issues and what we're enabling or disabling in our children. I hope to tie in some of the foundational themes from season one to highlight a few ways that parents can find more proactive approaches to their parenting styles. Remember, parents are creating a part of the future world, and it's time to think about the legacy we're leaving behind and the ripple effects it will have. So let's dive in with our guest for today's episode. Welcome, Devin Moore. Devin, if you wouldn't mind, please tell our audience a little bit about yourself.
Of course, and thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Devin Moore. I am the founder and CEO of Race to Speak Up, which is an anti-bullying organization that focuses on educating students about bullying prevention, as well as empowering them to be upstanders. At Race to Speak Up, we heavily believe in the power of unity, and we also believe in the power of preventing bullying in all its forms. Therefore, we do that through our anti-bullying work or our Race to Speak Up Against Bullying workshops, where we're going into schools, we're going into different communities, companies, organizations, and educating their students as well as educating adults too about this problem, as well as its signs, its effects, and the best ways to really work towards giving effective solutions to different schools, to different companies, different communities about this issue. And then also beyond that, I am the author of Devin Speaks Up. That is a children's anti-bullying book with Devin Speaks Up. So I officially released that when I was 18 years old. I'm currently 19 years old. So it's been about a year. I officially released it in October of 2022 for National Bullying Prevention Month. And it focuses on sharing my personal bullying story so that others can see it, relate to it, and really understand what it can look like. And then it shows how to be upstanders and also the power of diversity. And so I wrote that book in order to give students, teachers, parents that tool that they can bring into their own environment to further understand and educate themselves as well as each other about this important issue.
Thank you. Thank you. As you can all tell, Devin is a very impressive young man. And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about, I was wondering, what did your experience with bullying tell you about yourself? And what did it tell you about your parents?
That's a really great question. So that's also kind of a couple of things to dissect within that, because I went through my own personal bullying story when I was 14 years old. So it was a lot of racist bullying at that. But the thing is, it taught me that though it was a hard time, though I was afraid of what those bullies would do, I still knew the power of my voice. I knew the power of speaking up. I knew that, and luckily my parents were able to really instill or just educate and really put this into my mind that I am an amazing, smart, young Black person who, regardless of my anything, should not be going through any form of it of hate. But unfortunately, because I'm Black, that's just something that tends to happen. But it showed me that I am someone who is resilient. It showed me that my parents are who are people who really understand that they love their child, understand that their child is, I mean, for my parents, we're literally like everything for them, which I think that's really nice, but they really were able to enforce this knowledge of, Devin, we're here for you. We love you. We're going to do everything we can for you. And then also your skin color is something that makes you beautiful. It's something that has a lot of history for all of us as Black people, as people of color. And don't look at that as a negative. These boys looked at it as a negative. You look at it as a positive because it is a positive. It's something that, I guess, makes you unique. Yeah, we could say that. Something that makes you unique and beautiful.
So they helped you identify the positive side of the thing the bullies were attacking you for.
Yes.
And I think that is something that I want to make this clear to parents. When we find out our children are being bullied, or when we find out that our children have friends who are being bullied, one of the most important things we can do as parents is highlight the good side, right? Not make excuses, not say, well, this is just the way things are, not none of those things to minimize the experience, but rather maximize the reframe of that experience. So say, if this is the thing they're bullying you for, let's figure out ways that this thing is wonderful for you. And it doesn't matter what that is, whether it's a disability, whether it's your religion, whether it's your skin tone, whether it's, it doesn't really matter what the thing is, because you can always find the positive side to the negative thing that people are pulling on. So I really appreciate that. And I think your parents did an incredible job. I think they also remember one thing that I always remind parents of is that children aren't born, human beings are not born as blank slates. There's already a lot of things about you that were predetermined in your genetic code, in your DNA, certain personality traits, mental health, behaviors, those are already a part of you. And what your parents did was environmentally, they boosted all of those things. So they supercharged that stuff. And that helped you be able to use your voice to speak up. Now, I know you've probably spoken to hundreds, if not thousands, of kids who feel they have no voice to speak up. What are some of the things that they've told you about the reasons why they don't want to speak up?
That's another great question. And so I've spoken in front of thousands of students. So there's definitely been a wide range of stories that I've heard. There's been stories that I've heard where students have said, oh, I'm maybe too shy. And, you know, it's a lot for me. You know, Devin, I'm not someone who is not as extroverted as you. Or they have said, oh, well, okay, I know my school environment and I know kind of like the teachers and the school staff and kind of that. So if I were to speak up, they would just make me to be the one that was in the wrong, when in reality, I'm the target. Or like, those are the types of things that I have heard. People have also just directly reached out to me. That's the second thing that I mentioned that tended to be when I heard that the most, was when people were reaching out to me, but also when people are telling me in person, when I'm like giving my workshops or any speaking engagement that I am having, really. So those are the main things that I would hear from those who are kind of, it's harder to speak up for, or also it's like, okay, maybe my environment doesn't have the resources or the capacity to really educate or really get something effective done. And then they say that's why they think it's important to have these workshops, these Race to Speak Up Against Bullying workshops, this anti-bullying education and knowledge. And I'm like, yes, of course it is very important. But it's sad to see how many people are just, they go through the things that I just listed, or they go through, okay, the bullying's happening, I don't know what to do. Or maybe the parents are not even able to know what to do, because how do you handle bullying? Like, not everyone just kind of is born with that knowledge.
Right.
So then it's like, what do they do? Oftentimes they take the child out of school. I've noticed that a lot more with younger children.
Yeah.
Or just something along that realm. Unfortunately, there's a lot of that when it comes to this very negative, very stigmatized word of bullying.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I know that there are a lot of schools that have anti-bullying policies. In public school systems, we have to have anti-bullying policies. But a policy is different from a strategy. And so I want parents to get an understanding that one of the ways that you can actively make change is not just to have something in writing, but to ensure that there is a plan of action that the school can take, that the parents can take, and that the students can take. On all those levels, it's really important, because what we're talking about here ultimately is support. When somebody's being bullied, they need to know there's someone they can reach out to that will consistently support them, that will ensure that. So if that kid is telling you, it doesn't seem like if I speak out about this, I'm not going to get support from the teachers, I'm not going to get support from the administration, I'm not going to get support, I don't have many friends in school, so I'm probably not going to get support, or the friends I do have don't want to speak out either, so therefore it's going to be impossible, I feel like my parents are just going to tell me to deal with it, all of these things. But when students feel that they actually have a direct line of support, true support, that will embolden them to speak up. But when they feel like it's all words and not actions, which oftentimes happens when we have policies that don't actually get enforced, right? I think that that's really, really important to get people to understand that we need to know that. And so with parents, you are your child's first line of support. Now, that doesn't mean coddling them. It means supporting them. There is a huge difference. So I'd like your take on what that looks like, what real true supportive parenting looks like when it comes to bullying. And I know your parents were some examples of wonderful support. Can you broaden that out more for other parents who are dealing with varied forms of bullying towards their children?
Yeah, of course. And also, first, I want to acknowledge, I know not everyone has the same situation as me. Not everyone's family is as supportive. I don't know if I should use the word lucky, but for lack of better terms, I'm the lucky ones. So I just want to acknowledge that. But to answer your question, I would say the best ways for a parent to support their child, not only in just bullying, but also within anything, because, you know, we want to be supported. Children of parents want to be supported no matter what their age is, but when it comes to bullying specifically. So I would say the best thing is to really, obviously at a young age, as you're growing up, your home environment, at the bare minimum, it should be your home environment should be a place where the child feels 100% safe to speak about anything that they're going through. So you can do that through simply if your child isn't super comfortable with maybe talking about something, but they just under maybe talking about a certain specific topic, but you need to make sure you, my words are getting jumbled. Bear with me real quick. Let me restart. So when it comes to parents in the home environment and kids, when it comes to their home environment, that should be the safest place for them, or it should feel as though it's the safest place for them, so that even if there's a topic that they don't know much information on or they want to ask questions on, that's what I mean to say, then they should feel the safest doing it at their home environment, or just straight up doing it with their parents. But kids need to have that certain specific safe spot so that they can really feel comfortable. That can be your home environment. That can be whatever environment that they are mainly in. When it comes to parents, make sure that the child always understands that you will be there for them. Even if you don't know the answer, they'll still find it. You know, my mom actually she would still say that, but she used to say that when I was younger, like, even if I don't know the answer, Devin, I'll still find it for you. She would say that to my brother too. So I'm like, looking back, I'm like, wow, because I'm the type of person to ask my mom a billion questions and anyone a billion questions. So I understand I'm lucky in that sense. But that's what children need. They need to understand that they can ask anything. And even if they say, even if you're telling them to clean their room and they say, why? Instead of saying, it's because I'm your parent. No, why don't you kind of just come to them more as a person and say, well, if you don't know this now, then later on in the future, your room will be stinky, your room will be messy, and then other people will look at you more in a negative light. They'll have a lot of assumptions about, like, you know, kind of like explain to them. And then also say, hey, you know, if if you need help, I'm here to help you because I'm your parent. I'm here to teach you. So having those open lines of communication, that's really necessary, because then if they're going through bullying or hate in any of its forms, they'll be like, you know what? Okay, I really feel comfortable going up to my mom, my dad, my parent, my guardian, my older sibling, you know, like someone who they trust. They're a lot more likely to go and speak to them in those situations.
I want to highlight something that you said, because I think this is really, really key. Devin's mom didn't say, I know everything. She actually owned the fact that she doesn't know everything. When parents create a space where they actually don't know everything, but they're willing to figure it out with their children, they create a primarily safe space. Because here's the problem. When children are being bullied or they're being intimidated or harassed outside of the home, and they come to their home and they look at their parents as beacons of perfection, as like they can do no wrong, as parents who are like, everything I say is what it goes. That's how it is. That's what it is. I'm not ever going to be wrong. I don't make any mistakes. What happens is children become too intimidated to share the situation that they're in, where their parent could, because they look at their parent as, well, if they can't make mistakes, they've probably never been in a situation like this where something is wrong, right? Mistakes equate to something being wrong. But when parents own their mistakes or own the moments where they don't have all the knowledge, it humanizes them to their children, and their children feel more secure to go to them with their problems. People will not go to other people with their problems if that person acts like they're perfect. That goes across the board. I tell people all the time, I may be a parenting expert and have 17 years of knowledge in my background, but I'm not perfect. And I make mistakes, but I own those mistakes with my child. And he understands that that means I'm human and I'm not perfect, but it creates a safety and a security net that ensures that he's willing to own the mistakes he makes with me. And I see that in everyday little things. Now, my son is only six, but even just the other day, he has an issue with washing his hands after he goes to the bathroom. And we're always reminding him, Connor, don't forget to wash your hands. Don't forget to wash your hands. Or remember to wash your hands. He comes out and I said, did you wash your hands? And all of a sudden he starts crying. And he says, Mommy, I didn't wash my hands. And I have to tell you something. And he was very upset. And I said, what's going on? He said, I usually don't wash my hands when you and Daddy remind me. So rather than making him feel bad about that mistake, I said, oh, okay. Well, can you tell me what's the reason behind why you don't wash your hands? And he said, well, I think because I want to do it really fast and get back to what I'm doing. And I said, oh, okay, I understand. So then we had a conversation about the importance of washing his hands. And I didn't make him feel bad about not washing his hands, because that's not what he needed. He needed me to understand the why behind it and reiterate the reason for that we need to wash our hands. But that is something that's really small, but it can become magnified over time when children don't feel that parents have their support, but rather they only bear the brunt of feeling being made to feel bad when they don't do something their parent wants them to do. And again, that doesn't create a space and an environment where the child wants to go to their parent and tell them they did this, or there is something happening to me that I feel like it must be something I'm doing wrong. See how quickly that can translate. Well, in school, if I'm being bullied, that must mean I'm the one doing something wrong to be the target of the bully. Because at home, my parents are perfect. Nothing, you know, they know everything. This is what we need to do. We need to create safer environments. And it starts with our parents. We have to change the mindset around do what I told you to do because I'm your parent and I said so. We have to change that. And we have to start talking to our kids about doing things because it will be most beneficial to them. Having a stinky room, you know what? It's not just about what other people see about my stinky room. It's also how I feel about myself. If I have a stinky room, then I kind of start feeling bad about myself. And it's about building their self-esteem resilience so that they're less worried about their image esteem. That is, and I like to remind people of this all the time, self-esteem is what you think of yourself. Image esteem, it's not what others think of you. It's the perception you have of what others think of you and the value you place on it. If you feel that what others think of you is more important than what you think of yourself, guess what? You're not going to stand up for yourself. You're not going to seek support when somebody's bullying you. So I'd like your take on that. What, you know, when somebody is feeling that they don't have a place to go, what can they do?
I would say that when it comes to, more specifically, if they feel as though they can't go to a parent, try to find a teacher, school staff, something like that. If they can't find that, try to find one of your friends, close friends that you trust. You don't have to have 1,000 friends. You don't need to be that popular kid or whatever it's called. Yeah. Or if you don't even have that, there's different organizations that you can reach out to. There's different even hotlines, if it has to get to that point. But there's different phone numbers, different emails that you can reach out to. Just look up things like anti-bullying organization. Look up things like, I know my college, I'm going to use this as an example, has something called Lean On Me, where it's students anonymously texting the like people or the staff at Lean On Me about something that negative that's really going on in their life that they really need to talk about. Because, you know, we're college students. There's things like that that's out there now. And since you have the internet, oh, great, let's look it up. Like, these are the easy things that you can do. You can just type away or text away or type away on your phone. It's or on your tablet or whatever. It's as simple as that. There's a couple, maybe not simple, but is easier to do that because you could just type it in. Those are the types of things that you can do. That's what I would say you could do. Or maybe, hey, you know, what if you have that person in your environment? Like, say, maybe, oh, you love to read. You always go to the library. You become friends with the librarian, and she's really a nice person, but she's also very supportive. And it's like, you know what, Devin, I'm here for you. You know what? Tell me whatever you're comfortable with. I don't need to share all your information. You don't need to tell me all your information. I'm not going to, you know, harass you, bother you, try to get anything out of you. Just know that I'm here for you. You know, I'm just a librarian. Like, you know, you could be that person for other people. You could be that support system for other people. It's not your requirement or your necessity to be that, but it's a good thing to do. People need support. You never know what's going on in someone's day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is really important to point out too, if you're a child who maybe doesn't have access to the internet at home or on your phone, you can go to your school's library and get on the computer there and look up resources and supports. So that's really important. A lot of times when we have a situation that feels very overwhelming, it also feels very isolating. It feels like, gosh, nobody else feels this way. Nobody else is going through this. But the truth is, once we gain a little bit more awareness that, yeah, actually, there's a lot of people in that space, a lot of people going through that, that's when the support kicks in. That's when you can find people, like you said, you know, even people who just have the same interests as you, the same hobbies and things of that nature. Because again, you know, while your home should be the primary place of support, we also know that the reality is that's not always the case. So I want to point to something else that you and I talked a little bit about yesterday, about when parents find out that their child is in fact the bully. What, you know, I have met parents, here's the thing. I've met parents who are absolutely ashamed when they find out that their child is the bully. And I also happen to have so many stories of parents who deny, 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 and they're unwilling to see their child as the bully. I think it's probably one of the hardest things, because if we cannot get at the root of the problem, which is stop making bullies in the first place, we're going to constantly have victims. And the victim shouldn't have to deal with the aftermath. It shouldn't get to the place where we keep having people becoming victims of people who are bullies. We need to stop creating bullies. So I would love your take on what's one way that we can stop creating bullies. And, you know, I'll talk to the parents about what they can do when they find out their child is a bully.
I think a great way that we can stop creating bullies is through, and we're going to kind of take it back a little bit, when it comes to generational trauma also, but generations prior to, like, for example, me in comparison to my parents' generation and then generations before that, I know in older generations, and I'm not going to say all the time, don't at me, but in older generations, there's a lot of hate that's taught or hate that's almost enforced. And then that leads to unconscious bias, that leads to stereotyping people simply just because, oh, that's what you was raised on in your community, in your household, in your environment. Why don't we take that? And then why don't we switch the narrative? Why don't we actually stop ourselves and then retrain ourselves in that situation? It's kind of funny, actually. I put on this shirt because I just really, it's warm. But this shirt, it says prejudice is an emotional commitment to ignorance. Now, oh wait, let me actually kind of try and
there you go. Okay.
So I was gifted this shirt by Jane Elliott, an anti-racism activist, and she was telling me about the power of retraining. She was telling me about the power of, okay, so if a parent is in this household, they're teaching their child, whatever they're teaching the child, something that should not be a part of that behavior is teaching the child to be rude or racist or homophobic or have these negative preconceived notions about certain types of people simply because they are of that social group, whether it be race, whether it be ethnicity, culture, gender, sexuality, size, like the list goes on and on. We need to stop ourselves in the moment, especially if it does come to unconscious bias, because if it's unconscious bias and you're saying something, you really need to kind of take a few steps back after you're committing whatever you're doing, whatever you're saying. Take a couple steps back, really think about what you're saying, put yourself in other people's shoes, and then go from there and see, okay, how would that make the person feel? Because if you're teaching your child this, your child's thinking that it's normal because you're a part of your normal, your child is going to be thinking that that's something that's normal and something that they can now do towards others. They can find someone in their school that's a Black boy, a Black girl, a Hispanic, an Asian person, and say, you know what? I feel power over them. So I'm going to go over to them and I'm going to hate them. And how I'm going to hate them is I'm going to say what my mom said and use some racial slur, use some sort of inappropriate insult, microaggression. So I think retraining definitely needs to be a part of the conversation, if you ask me, because that can go a very long way. I remember a couple of years ago, a part of a national competition for the NAACP called AXO. And so I made it to, every year I was doing it, I made it to nationals. The last year that I did it was like during my senior year or something like that. And so in high school, I mean. And so there was these two adults that were speaking, but it was a bunch of adults and then me, because I just walked up to it. And then they were saying, they didn't really know how to kind of like stop this negative mentality. And then I said to them, retraining needs to be a part of the conversation. And then also first simply acknowledging the fact that you are in fact saying something that can be very rude and very detrimental to someone else's mental health. And it's like also just acknowledge, because I know we're humans, we're going to accidentally say something wrong. Also, you don't know what's really triggering to people, but the things that are obviously triggering to people is when you say something hateful, when you say something that's racist, when you say something that's homophobic, when you say something that's all the isms, phobias, you know what I mean, that type. In order to stop this before it even starts, stop creating a bully, you need to make sure that you're not saying or acting on these behaviors that could lead to someone else taking on those actions and behaviors, because those actions and behaviors, those negative actions and behaviors directed towards certain groups, that being taken on by your child, that could then lead to them becoming a bully.
Right.
So
thank you. I think that's beautiful. And I'd like to point to something really important. Hatred is often born out of fear of the unknown. Long, long, long ago, as humans developed, and I think I told you this yesterday, we developed the instinct for fear. You know, our lizard brain, our reptilian brain tells us to fear something that's different than us. And in that survival mechanism, that means that when we see something different than us, we should be fearful of it. But we've come a long way as a species and a civilization. We no longer need to fear that which is different than us. And so when you find yourself hating on something, or when you find yourself trying to minimize something else to feel better about yourself, you need to ask yourself, why? What am I afraid of here? Because it's one of the most important things you can do. Asking yourself, well, what am I afraid of? Is it that I'm afraid because it's a learned thing that I learned from my parents or my grandfather or my uncle or somebody like that? Or is it that I fear this person might change my life path, have some influence over my life path and my life choices? You know, investigate the fear to better be able to understand it. Because oftentimes when we investigate the fear and then we learn about the thing about which we most fear, we can find that when with true understanding of the thing we're fearful of, we become no longer fearful of it. So what's really interesting, I'll tell you a story. When I was in college, when I got to my freshman year of college, this 18-year-old, you know, we was coming into college, new year, it was 94. Okay, so I'm dating myself now. I met this girl, and she was quite lovely, and we became nice friends, and it was really nice. We started to talk, chat, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And one day she finds out I'm Jewish, and she says to me, in all honesty, oh, where are your horns? And I said, I'm sorry, what? She said, you know, your Jew horns, your devil's horns, your horn, do they go back into your head, into your skull? And I looked at her really dumbfounded, and I said, and I took a breath, and I'm amazed. I didn't scream at her. I didn't say, how dare you? I didn't say, you know, that's disgusting. I didn't say any of that stuff. I said, okay, where did you hear this? And she's like, well, you're the first Jew I met. And, you know, this is what I learned when I was growing up, that Jews are the devil's children and that they're all sorts of things. I said, ah, okay. I'd like to give you a little information. That's not true. And we don't have horns. And, you know, she was quite embarrassed because instead of meeting her with anger, see, when we meet people with anger, it oftentimes makes them double down on that, which on their ignorance, unfortunately. And so instead of meeting her with anger, I met her with the understanding that her ignorance wasn't born out of hatred. It was born out of just ignorance, not knowing anything different. And we stayed friends. We remained friends. And I was the first Jewish friend she ever had. And it opened her up to gaining more friends from many different walks of life, because honestly, she was closed off from a lot of different people and it stretched her. Now, I could have done something different in that moment, which would have doubled her down in keeping her shielded with her hate, with her fear, her ignorance, and her hatred. And it would have instilled in her a hatred, right? But I didn't do that.
I see what you're saying. That reminds me of a story now, actually. So quick story time also.
Share story time. I love story time.
I remember in high school, there was this person. And So at my freshman year of high school, you know, everyone was new. I was new. I was like, I don't know anyone here. But so I was one of the few queer kids that was like in that high school, in my year at least. And so there was this individual and he was also queer. So we kind of clicked because it's like, oh, okay, we can relate to each other and stuff, right? And then we were also people of color too, so that kind of added on to it. So it kind of made us feel cool. But and I always found him so funny. Now, I found out that people were kind of telling him stuff about me behind his back that I know I never said, simply because we are both queer. People were just immediately saying, oh, you both should date. Even though I'm like, no, ew. But so basically, because he was hearing that, and because I actually found this out from one of my friends in my senior year about how people were saying that, he was getting mad, right? And so he directed all that anger towards me, though. And my thing is, I didn't even know why he was doing that, because I'm just like, I just got out of class. I thought we was friends. And so he went out of his way to, every time he would see me, he would purposely try to embarrass me, try to annoy me, try to make me feel as though I'm the other. At first, I was giving it attention. I was getting mad. I was like, can you stop? Like, hello? I'm just trying to eat my lunch right now. Like, can you stop right now? And then he never stopped. So I thought to myself, I'm like, I'm tired of this. So I literally just ignored him. I literally just, I would be there and I just straight up ignored him. That led to him getting so mad that then he straight up started talking about me behind my back. So I, but my thing is, it was weird actually. Well, that that is weird. But my thing is, he had this almost reputation of talking bad about people. It's just with me, it was even more, which is always crazy, because I'm just like, I didn't do, like, I'm not one of the kids that is like trying to do something crazy to people. So he would do that. And because he would talk about people a lot, there would be times where even in science club, he would come in and introduce a new person to everyone. And then he would say, and that person, and refer back to me. Or say something else that was even rooted, even more rude than that, but I'm not gonna get too into that. And so after he would kind of say these things, and then he would always manage to kind of just leave sometime during that time, then the person he would either introduce or the people that were there and he was saying rude stuff to me about, I mean, to them about me, they would almost just never believe him, because I clearly am not the type of person to do anything. Or at least I just wouldn't respond. I completely ignored him, which really made him annoyed. And, you know, on top of that, for the people that he was really trying to make mad at me, I managed to become their friends. And I was saying, I remember there was this one girl who he brought into science club. And he was trying to be rude towards me and not get her to not like me. Once he left, she just sat next to me and we was all like making some art thing. And I was like, I am so sorry for what he said. I don't know why he's so rude, but he's just kind of always rude. And then I said to her, but how are you? How's your day going? We literally became friends. We're still friends to this day. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing with a couple of other people. And on top of that, at the end of the school year, during our prom, he didn't really have anyone that he could go to as his date or whoever he's taking to. He didn't really have many people because of what he was saying, because of how he was. And it wasn't just me. I know what he mainly did to me.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you see how these talking about people being rude backfires so much. But also, again, if the person is not doing anything to you, you don't need to be rude for out of nowhere. Like, I didn't do anything to you. But it's had true. So much negativity and anger because of what other people were saying that he directed it towards me. I just knew I didn't feel like dealing with it, because I'm like, I'm already tired of having to do all this schoolwork. And on top of that, though I'm passionate about my organization, it's still a lot to do as well. So I'm already having a lot of stuff that I'm already doing. I'm not adding him onto my plate.
Absolutely. I think that's, you know, that's a really primary example of how divisiveness breeds hate and fear and more divisiveness. And what's really unique about human beings is, as unique as each of us are, one of the reasons why we fall into senses of isolation is because there is a uniqueness to each human that it's hard for them to see themselves in other people. And because there's so many different ways to be different, it means that it feels less connected. There's less of connection. So I always try to encourage people, find the empathetic connection thread. Find what brings you together, even if it's just one human being to another. Look at the two of us talking. We're both talking. We probably couldn't be more different, right? But there are similarities in some of our experiences. It doesn't mean that we are similar people. It means that there are similarities, and there's one similarity not one single person can get away from, and that is our humanity. So the minute you can tap into somebody else's humanity, it takes away the desire to be divisive. The minute you can be compassionate to finding the empathetic thread of connection between two people, it dismantles hate, it dismantles ignorance, and it dismantles fear. And that brings us together, because the truth is, statistically, they did a study on this a number of years ago, and they figured out that every human being born, every human being in recorded history and to date who's been born, is as unique as 1 in 4 trillion. That's how unique you are. And so your uniqueness means, because it's born of your genetic makeup, but also your environment and also your experiences. So in your life, between all of those three things, you've had a vast difference than other people, that you are as unique as 1 in 4 trillion. But yet you're still human at the end of the day. And that is what connects you. And if you can find the human empathetic connective trait between each of you, whether that's you both love puppies, it doesn't matter what it may be, but I promise there's ways to connect to other people. You just have to be willing to try and set your ignorance aside, set your fears aside, and build trust with one another. Because let me tell you, in this world, we have more people that need to be helped than there are helpers to help them. And so the more people we have, there's no scarcity of need for people to be helping one another. Devin and I are not in competition to help people. We both eagerly want to help individuals. And that's why we are driven to working together and not trying to put each other down. Because I will support Devin in what he does, and he'll support me in helping parents. And that will make more people be able to be helped than ever before. But if we're only willing to jump on the bandwagon of figuring out how to create bigger divides, we're going to be more disconnected. And one of the human needs, the core needs of human beings, and Devin, you're going to learn about this in psychology. You'll learn about Deci and Ryan, who developed the self-determination theory, and that there are three core human needs. There is connection, competency, and control. And control is really all about autonomy. And connection is a core human need. But the less connected we are, the more divided we are, and the more hate that's bred, and the more bullying that is pushed into our society. And we cannot tolerate that, because we're losing our humanity with every step of divisiveness and bullying and disconnect. So, let's reconnect together. And Devin, I'd like any of your final thoughts, and then we'll say goodbye for today.
Yeah, I would just say I really appreciate how you worded that. It was very, in fact, you have a very poetic way of saying things too. So I appreciate the way that you worded that, because it's true. I think the power of unity is very important. It'll take us a very long, it'll take us on a very long and positive path if we're standing together and standing united. Being upstanders, I'm always talking about that, someone who supports the target of bullying. Yeah. But I guess the last things I would say, something I always like to leave everyone off with, is let's race to speak up against bullying. Let's hurry up and speak up when we're going through any form of hate, any form of bullying, and also make sure that we are trying to work towards being more positive, supporting our own selves and supporting others, being that light.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Devin. And on that note, happy parenting, people, and may the evolution of your parenting skills be ever in your favor.